Go your own way with Isuzu Ute's Get Up and Go sale. With 3 years free scheduled servicing across the 4x4 D-Max and MUX range. For terms and conditions, hurry to your local Isuzu Ute dealer today.
Justin Timberlake, who'll headline the halftime show. The atmosphere, it is like the day at an Olympic Games in the build-up to the 100-metre final at the track. The energy, every eye, every conversation throughout the day has been directed towards tonight. It is frigid here in Minneapolis. The day started at minus 22 and it warmed up to minus 17. And as the daylight starts to recede, it will get colder still. But inside, the BFG-like doors, the glass doors here are 95 feet high. They are sealed and thus it's heating up inside. For Patriots fans and for Eagles fans, the Philly chant has filled the air for the last couple of days shamelessly around Minneapolis, given their history with the home side, the Vikings. They hold sway in the crowd, a crowd that will build to 66,000. We are an hour and a half away from kickoff. We will have all the build-up and the colour of the pre-game for you as we go along. We'll also have Stephen Quartermain join us in the studio back in Melbourne to reflect upon the sporting issues and events of the weekend. But we are going to start with two of our AFL coaches, Geelong's coach Chris Scott and the Hawthorn maestro Alistair Clarkson, who is both a Patriots fan and he has strong connections through Philadelphia. So he's both delighted and conflicted as he made his way to the stadium today. They're here as part of a small but select group of international coaches for a conference, and included in the eight who have come together are Team Sky boss Sir David Brailsford and the English football manager Gareth Southgate. They've been swapping ideas about what team culture looks like at this point in our sporting history and what the learnings from around the world are and how they could be adopted for the AFL. Chris Scott and Alistair Clarkson came together and I joined them for breakfast on Super Bowl Sunday.
Chris Scott and Alistair Clarkson, welcome to SEN.
Thanks, Jared. Yeah, it's been a very cold but interesting trip thus far.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. It's exciting to be here.
How's in Minneapolis treated you?
Well, it's a little fresh, let's be honest. It's as we sit here at the hotel looking out the window at the blue sky, it looks a little bit better than it is when you actually get out there. But it's just, you know, whether you're an NFL fan or not, just being part of the buzz and seeing the way the NFL goes about it, they effectively come in and take over the city, you know, is a great experience. But to add to that, you know, the chance for us to spend some time with some of the really interesting people of world sports has been fantastic.
So, Alistair, just give us a little insight into the people who have been at your close-knit conference of coaches.
Yeah, well, there's a selection of people from various sports around the world, particularly Northern Hemisphere sports. That's why Scotty and myself are fortunate to be part of that, represent the whole of the Southern Hemisphere. But we're very much in the minority in terms of representation of world sports. So we usually have to do a lot of travel, which we're prepared to do, because if we wait for the Northern Hemisphere to come to Australia, it probably isn't going to happen. So we've been prepared to jump on a plane. But, you know, whether it's rugby, English football, or we had a guy from Cirque du Soleil who it's all about high-level performance and how you get your best out of your athletes. You know, obviously, those that are in the circus, most of them have come from a gymnastics background, so that transfer from a gymnast to a performer in the arts really was a really intriguing and interesting conversation to have with him. So it's been a great opportunity for us, and probably the strange part about it, you're in a room with one another in terms of a conference for a couple of days, but then there's the social aspect of going out for a meal or going. You know, last night we went to the Timberwolves played the New Orleans Pelicans in downtown Minneapolis, and we all went to that game together, and then went out for a couple of drinks afterwards, and we've learned about one another more in those settings than we have sitting around a table in some instances.
And what have you seen, Chris? What facilities have you had a look at?
We were extremely fortunate to go out to the Vikings' new facility It's not quite open yet, which is, again, we were very fortunate to get the opportunity to put the hard hats on and go out to, you know, a facility that's been a $150 million spend. Can be a little frustrating, I guess, when you see the scale of things over here. You know, we can take little bits and pieces, but we're just never going to reach the scale that they have over here. Even the Timberwolves facility, which is on site at the Target Centre in downtown Minneapolis, was amazing. You know, different again in terms of scale, because you know they have 15 players as opposed to, you know, in the preseason the Vikings were saying that their locker room houses 90 plus players. It's just, and you know, billionaire owners, it's just a different world to the one in which we operate. But having said that, spending, you know, a few days intensively with the GMs of the Falcons and the Vikings, and Scott Layden, the GM of the Timberwolves, the basketball team, you know, so many of the similarities are in terms of the culture and, you know, the way you go about things. I mean, the money might be different. You know, the number of players and the game style stuff. But we didn't talk too much about the technical side of things, but the way you deal with people, you know, the relationships you need to form are common across global sport.
And it's Super Bowl Sunday, so is that enough to bring out the fan in you, Al?
Yeah, it is. Well, I was like many Australians a long way from North America, so only ever used to see the game on television, and it took a game, strangely enough, that I stumbled upon. The first game that was ever offshore was a game between the Miami Dolphins and New York Giants, and it was held at Wembley Stadium, and I just happened to be in London at that time and said to a good friend of mine, you know, what's on tonight? He said, oh, the American football's coming to London. I said, oh, I might go and watch that, thinking that I'll just get a ticket, no worries. He said, have you got a ticket? I said, no. He said, well, you're going to need one. It's a 90,000 sellout. And so I was really fortunate that he got me a ticket. But I went to the game, and I was really fortunate to sit down next to two guys who'd travelled from Miami to watch the game. And they were, you know, just mad, hardcore supporters, you know, very professional in their own right. You know, one was a lawyer and one was heavily in finance. But I sat with them, and they taught me the game. You know, what happens on first down, what's going to happen on fourth down. And I didn't know anything really about the game other than that there was a hell of a lot of time between plays, it seemed to me, and I couldn't understand how, you know, this guy who plays left tackle on the offensive line would play a whole game of football without touching the ball. You know, there's some intriguing things about the game, and the fact that, you know, a whole team of people will play an offense, another team will play on defense, and another team again will play on special teams. So very, very different to our game, and as Scotty said, lots of parallels in terms of the coaching and the management of people and all that sort of stuff, but very, very difficult to actually pull some things out of the American game that actually directly apply to our game.
Chris, what's been your proximity to NFL over the years?
Very limited, to be frank, and I was saying to Clarko yesterday, I feel like a little bit of a fraud being here, and it's a bit, you know, embarrassing in a sense to be afforded the opportunity that we've got to go to the game and get the access to, you know, some of the really high quality people in the NFL and the NBA. When there, it seems to be a lot of people who have travelled from within the US who would, you know, give up almost anything to get a ticket to the game, and we're afforded that luxury. So I am aware that I'm lucky to be here, and while I don't know a lot about the game and don't profess to, you can't help but you know, admire the way that you know, the game goes about it. And I mean, you know, the NFL, like, and it's not really our area necessarily, but the way that, I mean, it's minus 25 degrees outside, and just the logistical operation that has been put in place, you know, over a pretty short period of time, because it didn't really occur to me that it was an imposition for the NFL that the Vikings went so long, you know, and were playing at the stadium. You know, if they weren't a part of the season so late, the NFL would have come in earlier and taken over the city. So, you know, just that side of it alone is enormous. But yeah, the game itself, it's I can't profess to be an aficionado, but being a part of the spectacle is going to be exciting.
Chris Scott and Alistair Clarkson on Super Bowl Sunday here in Minneapolis. The Patriots are a fascination worldwide for the successes that they've had. So, Alistair, you've done a bit of reading, a bit of studying, and you've sort of taken them on as your team.
Yeah, well, I started following them probably 12 or 14 years ago. Belichick, and the whole thing about American football fascinates me because, and its application to Aussie rules, there's so many lessons that we can learn, and one of them is around coaching and longevity, durability of our coaches in our game, unfortunately, and want as a collective, I think, to try to work hard to change this in the perception of the media of our coaches. Belichick started off coaching at the Cleveland side, and by all intents and purposes probably failed on his first mission as a coach, but Over in America, it's nearly a badge of honour if you have an opportunity like that and it doesn't go so well. Then it's an additional part of your reference and CV rather than a black spot against your name in Australian rules. You get a go, and I refer to guys like Vossie and Hurdy and Brett Ratton, and these sorts of guys who were such highly, highly decorated footballers, became coaches at a relatively young age, and then by the time they're 40, 42 years of age, they've had their opportunity of coaching a club for 5 years, hasn't worked out for them or their club, and it's just like nearly on the coaching scrap heap, whereas in America it's completely opposite to that, and Belichick is a fantastic example of that, and he now has created this dynasty, unbelievable club in an environment just like Australian rules football, which heavily governed and regulated by a salary cap and a draft, that wants you to win occasionally and then take off for a fair period of time and allow someone else to win. Their consistency at the top part of the table year after year is just extraordinary. And I think there's a lot of people intrigued about whether that's all sits on the back of their quarterback, who has just been a phenomenal success for many, many years in Tom Brady. But everyone is sort of waiting for Tom Brady to retire, and he's doing everything he possibly can not to do that, but they're waiting for him to retire to see whether or not he is the difference. Is that what makes Belichick? And that's got some fascination for me because we've been through a strong period with some very, very influential players in Hodge and Mitchell and Lewis and Gibson and these sorts of guys, and I'm also intrigued to try to work out whether we can sustain our level of performance post the influence of those players on our football club. So there's lots of parallels to draw, but they are a fascinating franchise, and they're heavily favoured to win again, although I spent a fair bit of time in Philadelphia with Brett Brown, the 76ers, so I've become a little bit of a fan of the Eagles as well. So to have both those sides, I don't really care who wins or loses. I just know it's going to be a great game. And sort of for the romance of the sport, I'd love the New England Patriots to win just because we're witnessing history, really. I mean, Belichick's record and Brady's record, I don't think will ever be surpassed in the game, and for us to be part of that is pretty special.
A fascinating story, whether you're just have a passing interest in the game or whether you live and breathe. I think one of the really interesting things as a more casual observer is the perception that the relationship between one of the greatest coaches of all time, one of the best players of all time, is a little bit strained. And it's one of the interesting conversations we've had over the last couple of days, that notion that it's okay to have high-level performers in your organisation not agree all the time. Having a high-performing operation doesn't necessarily mean that, everyone, gets along famously all the time. Creating a little bit of that tension can sometimes lead to positive results. Now, it's impossible to know for sure whether what you hear is accurate, and you suspect that a lot of it is probably not. But I think it's probably one of those situations where there's smoke, there's fire to an extent. You know, there's that they might may not. It might be exaggerated to some extent, but you know, I think I have to say that the idea that there is a little bit of tension between those two key people in the organisation, you know, is probably right. And you know, it hadn't seemed to impact their performance too much.
The fascinating part is the whole dynamic with the owner as well in terms of the whole Kraft family, who have taken over this franchise many years ago when they were just cellar dwellers, and still cost them plenty of money, I might add. But to their credit, they've built this unbelievable franchise that is just so strongly supported by the North of America now. But the tensions within footy clubs, you know, people quite often it's very, very similar within the walls of the Hawthorn Football Club. The outside perception is that Clarkson and Kennett are blueing all the time, you know, and we're very, very similar. We think that the tension within your organisation, as long as there is respect, is good. You know, philosophically, you're never going to agree on everything, and whilst you work out and challenge one another's philosophies, in a sense, that's a really good thing for the organisation, as long as, I said before, there's respect. And there's certainly that in the Patriots organisation. Brady Belichick and Kraft don't always agree on everything, but what they usually do agree on is when they've had their debate and discussion, that when they do walk out the door, they're all on the same page. And by and large, this is the first time probably in 16, 17 years of the Belichick-Brady connection that we've probably see it simmer outside of the walls of the football club, and not sure how and why and that sort of stuff. But they, big strong men, have come out and said, listen, yeah, we disagree from time to time, and Tom in particular open about this. So I don't agree with everything that cakes. You know, who's to argue that it hasn't been a really, really strong bond over a long, long period of time? And when we think of all our own struggles and little tiffs that we'll have at home with brothers or sisters or mothers and fathers and that sort of stuff, it's really no different. But it's the theatre of sport, and everyone tries to make something a lot bigger than it probably really is. And Tom and Bill and Robert have just said, well, this is life. This is what goes.
So there's a funny little anecdote, which I know you're aware of. We were having a game where Josh Gibson's told what's quite a famous little story within the Hawthorn walls on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, fit in or F off story.
Josh, great competitor for us, and one of the things he needed to do, in my view, to become a consistent performer was get stability in his life. And my view, it's very, very difficult to live that life where you're out on a consistent basis and you're with it's an enjoyable lifestyle in terms of interesting people and colourful and always something to do that's a little bit different. But to get some stability in your life, to be a top level athlete and consistent performance from week to week, we said, listen, you need to change some of your ways. And you know, attending a lot of events from day to day or week to week, and being seen at a lot of these social functions, I don't think it's going to help you in terms of being the consistent performer that you need to be. And so we spoke about that in his recruiting from North Melbourne to Hawthorn in the very early stages. And because that over the off season, you get to that Australian Open week in particular, and the Portsea Polo, and all sorts of things that. Now, this is going to be interesting to challenge Gibbo about whether he has changed his ways. And in that first 3 months at the footy club, we're saying, like, Melbourne in January just buzzes. And probably, to be fair, from about October through to January, Melbourne is just alive. There's so much activity. You know, you roll from the Spring Carnival into the pre-Christmas period, and then you've got the Australian Open, and the Big Bash is on telly. Like, there's so many things to do, and Gibbo just loved being a part of all that. And we just thought to ourselves, listen, you want to be a consistent performer, you just got to pull yourself back from that. And he hadn't done that as well as what we'd liked in the first 6 or 8 weeks of his arrival. That's where we did bring him in. And it wasn't just me. There was a series of his teammates that needed to say that to him too, because it's... I mean, he wants to be respected by the organisation and the coach, but the one he wanted the respect the most from was his peers and his teammates. And we all sat him down, and it seems a nice little tagline, the fit in or shut off type of message. But that was delivered by several of us that said, listen, mate, we think the best for you and us is to just get some continuity with your football, and the best preparation for that is to get yourself out of the social pages.
Well, it's had a lasting impact. I think that's quite clear. So just as we finish, Chris, what do you expect to see tonight? Pink's going to sing the national anthem. Justin Timberlake's the halftime show. The greatest player of all time out on the field. How do you feel about going there?
Oh, I mean, I'm excited. But, I've been to, maybe half a dozen NFL games in my life. But from what I'm told, this is a completely different experience. And again, as the theatre goer, I'm as interested in the way that the whole thing is set up. It's the infrastructure projects like nothing I've seen in my life, and there's we actually had the experience yesterday of walking through the lobby of a hotel that was absolutely packed with people, and we had to ask for directions, and in that conversation the lady said to us, like, just work your way around this line of people. And so, by the way, what are those people doing here? She said, oh, they're just standing here hoping to see some famous people. Nothing more than that. Just that when I walk through the lobby, it's just a surreal experience. And
we got to the basketball and we went straight into Floyd Mayweather. These people have been for 2 hours trying to get a glimpse of a famous person, and We just got to the basketball, turned around, and bumped straight into it. It was pretty special. It was good to see him in the flesh. We went to the city on Thursday night, conference all day, and went out for a meal together. And we heard this music blaring. We knew Pink was going to be here because she was singing the anthem. And but she's on a stage in the street. We thought, oh, if you wanted to go and see Pink, you'd have to play several hundred dollars and see her in concert. But she's on a stage, she's rugged up to, but microphone sitting on a seat and the stage just in like little Collins Street. It was extraordinary. And we went to a function on the night before where we saw Sin, heavens above, we get to basketball last night and he's sitting in the seats. It is a big event. Exciting time of the year for America, but it'd be a great opportunity for us to come and see what it's all like.
How many stars for Sting?
Oh, five. I'm a fan.
Enjoy Super Bowl Sunday. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Cheers.